How's it going, everybody? Brian Alvarez here on Wrestling Observer Live. We're here for the next 2 hours talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts, as we are every Sunday, 3 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 6 Eastern, on the Sports Byline USA Radio Network Series Satellite Radio, Channel 92, 94, 794, XM Radio Channel 208, and streaming live worldwide on the internet at WrestlingObserver.com. It is SummerSlam Sunday, the second or third, I guess depending on how big Royal Rumble is, WWE pay-per-view event of the year. It is the WrestleMania of the summer. We got a lot of big matches to talk about on the show today. Actually, there's a lot of news, not just the card, but everything going on down in Los Angeles right now leading into tonight's show, which does, in fact, begin moments after this show goes off the air. So for all of you listening to this right now, SummerSlam Sunday has begun. So we're going to go over the card. We're going to talk about all of the drama going on in WWE relating to, of all people, Ric Flair, who last night was on a WWE 2K14 Q&A session and hijacked the entire thing. A lot of mixed reviews to Ric Flair's performance, not just among the fans, but among the individuals that were on the panel, the individuals involved with the video game, the WWE side. We got a lot to talk about involving that. We're going to talk about SummerSlam as well and Raw, where they are going leading into WrestleMania. We're going to run down the card match by match, give our predictions. And we've also got news on UFC on FS1, the very first UFC on Fox Sports last night, after signing carriage deals to get him into 99 million homes around the country at a very discounted rate based on what UFC and Fox Sports wanted. We're going to talk about the show, the huge victory by Chael Sonnen in the main event, which sets up likely a match with Vanderlei Silva. And we'll talk about where they are going throughout the rest of the year. Darren Young coming out, which got a ridiculous amount of publicity. We're going to talk about that story and how that could play into the weekend. And I guess the rest of his career, actually, believe it or not. We'll talk about Brooke Hogan being gone from TNA. Lots of stuff going on in TNA and so much other news as well. So 2 hours packed full of wrestling and mixed martial arts talk, and to kick it off after the break. So stand by that dial. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here, WrestlingObserver.com. We're joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. We are here every Sunday, 3 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 6 Eastern, on the Sports Byline USA Radio Network Series Satellite Radio, Channel 92, 94, 794, XM Radio Channel 208. We stream live worldwide on the internet at WrestlingObserver.com. You can check us out on your smartphone, the TuneIn Radio app. If you search Sports Byline or Wrestling Observer, you can check out new shows and replays. Same with iHeartRadio, iHeart.com, the talk radio portal, Wrestling Observer Live, live and replay. Those are all up there as well. The Sirius Satellite Radio app. Obviously, a million places to listen to the show anywhere you live, anywhere in the world. The most listened to wrestling and mixed martial arts radio show anywhere on earth today, Wrestling Observer Live. We got Mike Sempervivi here on the line. And as noted, today is SummerSlam Sunday. It is a big day for WWE and wrestling fans. The WrestleMania of the summer is taking place. Brock Lesnar and CM Punk, one of the main events. John Cena, Daniel Bryan, the other main event. And we'll start with the card. Now, Mike, up until Monday, really, I think a lot of people figured the main event of the show was Lesnar and Punk. But after Monday, now I'm not even sure what match is going on last, because John Cena and Daniel Bryan seems like a much, much bigger match. Part of that, obviously, is the fact that Triple H is going to be the referee and they are going to do an angle one way or another. Whoever wins, whoever leaves as champion, Randy Orton obviously there with the briefcase, they are going to shoot an angle that is going to lead to this year's WrestleMania in some form or fashion. So that may end up going on last. And your thoughts on the top two matches, which to you is the bigger main event?
Well, I don't know. Obviously, Total Divas has worked. I'm sure that's the entire reason that John Cena and Daniel Bryan has been propelled into the position that it is. For me, though, still, it's Brock Lesnar and CM Punk. And I guess where the Cena-Bryan match is placed on the card is going to, it's possible that could determine a lot. Obviously, Randy Orton with the briefcase and John Cena's, you know, elbow issues. And you've already had Cena and Bryan, or Daniel Bryan and Randy Orton from, you know, just a couple of months ago. I mean, there's a lot of things that could tie in here and happen. It may not even happen until tomorrow night, but I think it's going to be telling wherever they put the Cena Bryan match, and I'm sure that's going to be great, but I really like the Staples Center. I like how this has become a tradition to have SummerSlam in Los Angeles, because until they prove otherwise, that crowd has been great. Randy Orton has been a guy where every time he's been in L.A., the place absolutely explodes for him. So to me, though, the main match is still Punk and Cena, Punk and Brock Lesnar, and that would be my main event, regardless of anything, unless you're going to do a big swerve with Randy Orton at the end.
The top matches, let's look at them one by one. John Cena and Daniel Bryan, it is for the WWE title. Hunter is the special referee, and I don't know what they're going to do, but I do know a few things. Number one, originally, Hunter was going to turn heel on this show, and probably Hunter and Vince would be in cahoots for a while, and then Vince would turn babyface and bring in an outsider to face Triple H at WrestleMania to regain control of his company. Now, who that person might be, will it be Steve Austin, will it be The Rock, will it be somebody in WWE, all of that up in the air, but that certainly was their long-term plan. So Hunter is there. If you watch SmackDown, they're strongly teasing, in WWE's own unique way, that he's going to turn on Daniel Bryan. I know that the oddsmakers have Daniel Bryan listed as a favorite, but the oddsmakers also have Randy Orton cashing in as a likely scenario. So my thought the whole time has been that Daniel Bryan will beat John Cena one way or the other, and then Randy Orton is going to cash in and turn heel. No easier way to turn heel than to steal the title from Daniel Bryan moments after he wins it. Maybe he will be Vince McMahon and Triple H's handpicked successor for the title. Maybe that's the storyline. And he's in cahoots with them. I don't know where they're going to go. It's so likely, and they're teasing so hard on television that Randy Orton is going to cash in, that one would almost think that that's not where they're going to go. But over the last 6 months, a lot of storylines have been revealed. A lot of finishes have been revealed based on the odds makers and what the odds are for each of the matches. Thus far, WWE has not changed a single finish as a result of the finishes getting out due to the odds makers. Now, if they decided to go a different direction, if they decided to put John Cena over, for example, that would be something completely unlike anything else they've done this year. John Cena is also going to be getting elbow surgery, it's looking like. He hasn't worked any house shows for about 2 weeks now, and it would make no sense to keep the title on him if he's going to be out for a while. So it seems that either tonight or tomorrow, John Cena's losing that title. Who leaves with the title is anybody's guess. I am going to stick with my prediction that Randy Orton is going to be champion by hook or by crook, which actually, an apropos term here in pro wrestling, by the end of Raw tomorrow night.
Yeah, I know we were talking last week. You brought up the scenario that people were talking about a three-way down the line, but obviously Cena's elbow, you know, surgery is going to put that into play. And, you know, my original idea that I thought would be good, I think, is, you know, the one that they should do and the one it looks like they probably could do, which is, you know, Orton cashes in. If it's not tonight, it's tomorrow night. You could have Triple H screw Cena tonight because he's going to be out anyway. And then you have Orton and Bryan, who already have a history as it is, and then when Cena comes back, you have him, you know, butting up, which makes the most sense if you're going to do an evil, you know, faction of bosses again. Well, you know, who's the Superman for this generation? Even though it probably makes people cringe to compare, or some people cringe to compare John Cena to Steve Austin. He's obviously would be the guy, and you can claim he's being put out even longer, you know, because of whatever happens. And I think that's the direction that they should go in. It just seems to make the absolute most sense, and it can work. You know, it works on a lot of different levels. You know, pulling the swerve just to pull the swerve, you know, we've complained about that for so long. It's been refreshing that WWE hasn't done that, because, a lot of times when you do it, it really makes no logical sense when you're sitting there looking at it, and I'm glad they haven't done it. And I think this is a situation here where, you know, if John Cena wins clean, great, you fooled everybody, you faked out the odds makers, and, you know, it would make you then wonder how many people are really betting on this sort of stuff anyway, and why would they really even care?
If Cena's going to be out for a while, then my official prediction, everybody, is that they do the match, and Triple H calls it right down the middle. They go 25 minutes or so. Daniel Bryan hits the unbreakable small package. Triple H counts the pin perfectly fairly. Daniel Bryan wins the title, yes, with a clean small package pin over John Cena. That's my prediction. And Triple H raises his arm afterwards, and then he gives him the pedigree, and then he beckons to the back, at which point Randy Orton comes out, cashes in, and wins the title. And they are in cahoots. John Cena, I guess, would disappear in the middle of this. I can tell everybody that as of today, the plan for the September pay-per-view is Randy Orton versus Daniel Bryan. If John Cena can be back in time, they can make that into a three-way. But that is the plan for now. So it appears that one way or the other, one of those two guys is going to have the title, and they're going to be wrestling each other for it in September. So however they get to that is however they get to that. But that is how I think they're going to do it, at least.
I guess. I'm just not big of a fan of, you know, then Cena disappears. To me, even though the unbreakable small package would be great and that would be a better way to do it, I could see some sort of, you know, I don't know, Cena gets his shoulder up, you know, the old famous double backdrop where a guy, you know, the shoulders are both down, guy gets one up at the last minute, and you could have Triple H even on Cena's side as he raises his up, obviously still counting three, which gives Cena something to complain about, and Again, I don't know. It's hard for me to see him disappearing in this, especially if you're going to have some sort of evil management thing, which is obviously something that they're doing.
So that is the main event of the show, and a lot of implications as to where they go from here. We had mentioned at least the possibility of Triple H and Steve Austin at WrestleMania. WWE, I'm sure, would love that. I don't know if Steve Austin's going to do it. But Austin is in town. He was part of the panel last night with Ric Flair that Flair hijacked. We'll talk about that more a little bit later on in the show. But I don't know if they've come to an agreement. I don't know if they're going to come to an agreement until closer to WrestleMania. I suppose it's possible that that some sort of tease with Steve Austin could be done tonight if that's where they want to go. But we'll see. I know he's there. But of course, he's also scheduled to do a podcast with Flair today, so he may be in no condition to perform tonight. We shall see. But back in a moment with more Observer Live on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here, WrestlingObserver.com. We're joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. We're here every Sunday, 3 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 6 Eastern, on the Sports Byline USA Radio Network. Sirius Satellite Radio, Channel 92, 94, 794, XM Radio Channel 208, and streaming live worldwide on the internet at WrestlingObserver.com. Check us out on your phone, your smartphone, the TuneIn Radio app. Search Sports Byline or Wrestling Observer on the TuneIn Radio app, and you can listen to the show live and archived every week, as well as the iHeartRadio Talk portal at iHeart.com or the iHeart app for your phone, as well as the Sirius Satellite Radio app, Wrestling Observer or Sports Byline. So no excuse to not listen to the show. It's on everywhere, every single week. And tonight we are talking SummerSlam, which is going to be taking place moments after the show goes off the air. We've been talking about the main event of the show. And now it is time for the semi-main. It is Brock Lesnar and CM Punk. And up until this past Monday, Punk was the favorite in this match. And for whatever reason, on Monday, the big switcheroo occurred. Brock Lesnar now a favorite. As of today, an even heavier favorite against CM Punk. And again, unless they decide to swerve the odds makers, not a single time this year has the underdog in a major match ended up winning. So my guess is that they have decided to do Lesnar versus Undertaker at WrestleMania. And as a result, they've decided that Brock Lesnar doesn't need to be doing a job here to make him 2-3 going into WrestleMania with the Undertaker. So I'm guessing that he destroys Punk. And my prediction for a finish, believe it or not, is ref stoppage due to ground and pound, believe it or not. That is my prediction. And Mike, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I was thinking the same thing when everything started to turn and the feeling started to turn that Brock Lesnar was going to get the win, which, you know, it was one of those things where it's like, you know, I was fine with Punk winning. It's kind of at this point with Brock Lesnar, in a way they were right. You know, they beat Brock Lesnar how many times? They didn't probably utilize him to what they could have to their fullest numerous times, and it doesn't matter. People love hearing the music. They love seeing him come out. The match is secondary. I won't say the match is secondary, but the result is secondary. It's almost like The Rock. When you got a star that big And the people consider that special. You know, they just want to see him. And even though it's, again, it's not the best thing in the world, you know, it doesn't matter what happens. But when the tide started to turn, it did make me feel a little bit better in thinking that, okay, you know, if you do it this way, then you could maybe do Punk and Lesnar at Rumble again or something later on down the line for Punk to try to get something back out of that. But, you know, Brock Lesnar doesn't lose another match, which means the possibility of him and Undertaker, which is, I think, realistically, and I know style-wise, it's not the best thing for the Undertaker, but you know what? There's so many, only so many Daniel Bryans to go around, and you're not doing he and the Undertaker at WrestleMania. You know, somebody could be so safe and bounce around the Undertaker for the Undertaker in the whole nine yards. It's got to be a super big mega thing, and that thing happens to be Brock Lesnar, and that's, you know, that as the main event of WrestleMania would be a monstrous thing. And even if, again, if it's not the main event, even just as that Undertaker attraction match, that would be the best possible scenario for you to do. So it does give me a lot of confidence now after hearing about this and the feelings about it that that's the direction they're going to go, which is perfect. And again, I think your idea, I didn't think about that, but it does make, that would actually make the most sense out of anything, would be Brock by, you know, blood stoppage, beating, something like that. And obviously they're PG. I don't know if they would, you know, dare do it or dare, you know, somebody gets busted open, quote unquote, hard way tonight, you know, if they do something like that. But, you know, your scenario with Lesnar stopping him makes, you know, a grand amount of sense.
So that is the semi-main on the show. I'm not sure which one's going to go on last. Based on Triple H being involved and everything like that, I'm guessing that the championship match goes on last. It's kind of their thing anyway, that you've got to have like a massive, important semi-main to outrank the world title match. And with all they put into the WWE title match, and if it does play into whatever they're doing at WrestleMania, then it only makes sense that one goes on last. But
the amount of attention they get, they always love this time. They love Mania for the obvious mainstream media and all the entertainment media that goes with it. But, you know, this is when they kind of have, you know, it's their time to shine in L.A. every year, and they've done it to the hilt. And that's another reason why, you know, the entertainment portion of the proceedings will probably win out to be the main event.
So we've got Alberto Del Rio and Christian for the world title. Alberto Del Rio's the favorite, which I'm sure he should be, given that Christian's beat him like 95 times, including in a full-length singles match on SmackDown. I don't know what they're going to do. Maybe they just did it. I don't even know why they did it. I understand the idea that Christian is a weak challenger, so let's put him over Alberto on TV to get people, you know, give people the idea that he can win. No one's buying the pay-per-view for this match, so giving it away for free isn't like it's going to cost them a single buy. But they got so much time on television, like 18 minutes, last Friday, that, I mean, I watched it, and normally I wouldn't think so much about it, but because they got so much time and a clean finish, it was almost like, all right, they have decided to do something at the pay-per-view where these guys aren't going to get a chance to do this match for whatever reason, whether they're going to do a quickie or they're going to do some sort of convoluted angle involving Sandow. I don't know what they're going to do. But when I watched it, that was my thought, that they're not getting a chance to do their match on pay-per-view, and so they're going to be given the opportunity to do the match for free on SmackDown. So I guess we'll find out. I mean, to me, you could give them 18 minutes on SmackDown and then 18 minutes on pay-per-view. But what are they going to do? They did their entire match on SmackDown. I mean, I don't understand how. I guess Christian is an awesome worker. And if you watch the SmackDown match, they did play off their first big match where Christian won with the three-quarter Nelson off the armbar attempt. They redid that spot, and this time Alberto kicked out. So I think Christian's smart enough that he could do another 18-minute match and make it different. But are they going to do that? I don't know. I just figure that something's going to happen here tonight. I don't expect Sandow to cash in. Maybe he will. But I expect something to happen where they don't get the opportunity to do their full match.
No, they'll probably go 9 with a garbage finish or something like that. And, you know, what you said about this match not being a selling point for anyone on the pay-per-view makes it even more frustrating that they had Christian go over Del Rio like that. I mean, the only thing you needed to do were have them do promos and keep them away from each other, and then have, because Damian Sandow has already invoked the name Alberto Del Rio as far as him wanting to be the guy to beat Del Rio, All you had to do was have a tag team match with Christian and Cody Rhodes against Alberto Del Rio and Damian Sandow, and you could have played a lot of things against each other right there and had Christian get, you know, the win over Del Rio in a match, you know, on SmackDown. That's all you had to do. And, you know, with Del Rio being in the position he's in, which is not good, Adam Carriker of the Washington Redskins hates Alberto Del Rio. Just wanted to throw that in there. But, you know, with the
can you tell me more about this? I need more information.
Well, he just absolutely can't stand him. He's got his podcast, Force and Pain, which is a nice podcast and everything, and just huge wrestling fan, and just can't stand Alberto Del Rio, and he's not the only one. He doesn't find him entertaining or fun or believe in his ability to kick ass or any of that sort of stuff. And because he's in that position, you have him losing to Christian to go out and have a match on the pay-per-view, which probably won't be very impressive, with him beating him, and he's, again, still in the same position, which nobody cares. So I think the build-up to this has been, you know, pretty awful, and the same feeling you have. I didn't see SmackDown, but again, with what you said about the time of that match and everything, obviously they're not going to have the time to do it tonight. And there's plenty of things on here, you know, that you can give reasons why it makes sense, and we've already seen them too much, you know, leading into this. So, you know, I feel bad for Christian because he is such a good performer, and I feel a little bit bad for Alberto Del Rio, too, because again, it's not to say that he could be at the level of an Orton or a Bryan or a Cena or any of that sort of stuff, but he should be in a far better position than he's in, and they keep just doing things to kind of work against him, even though they seem to be wanting to give him a relatively long title reign.
Big question tonight, really, about this match is, does Ricardo get involved? Del Rio destroyed him, and the idea at the time was that it's hard to... Alberto Del Rio's not getting over as a heel the way they want, and so it's one of those things where instead of just presuming that he's not very good at being a heel and he's not connecting, they look at the act and go, well, it must be Ricardo's too popular. But in reality, it's not that at all. But they removed Ricardo from the act, and he hasn't been seen since. So I suppose it's possible he could come out with the new Matador tag team, or... he could return here, although given the way that Del Rio destroyed him, drop-kicking steps into his head, nearly killing him, I don't know how you could explain Ricardo coming back and helping Alberto win. Doesn't really make sense to link Ricardo with Christian. So maybe he won't even show up at all. I don't know, but it's something to keep an eye out for.
Yeah, I think if they're going to do anything with Ricardo, it's going to be more down the line. They're going to show this as, you know, how Del Rio is a prick and everything, but... Again, since Christian's not winning and you're going to need more ammunition for Del Rio down the line, I think, because I don't think that Ricardo's got this dramatic amount of heat that some people think that he does. I mean, he was, you know, the wellness or whatever it is that got him suspended, and then he comes back and gets destroyed. I think they like him. I mean, they liked him. He was the most interesting part of Del Rio's role to a lot of people, and I think they realize that. So I can see something happening later on down the line, but it's just, again, more ammunition for later on for Del Rio.
So we got Cody and Damian Sandow, and Sandow is the favorite, in which case if the plan is for him to win, I don't know why they didn't go with their plan of putting the briefcase on the line. Would have been an extra, it's not going to sell any pay-per-views, but it would have been one extra added thing to make the overall show feel like a bigger deal. But no, it's just Sandow versus Rhodes. Sandow likely to win. I don't know what they're going to do. Most likely not a Sandow cash-in. I suppose it's possible. But, yeah, Cody Rhodes not getting over as a babyface. We'll see how the LA crowd reacts to him. I mean, they may make Damian Sandow a gigantic babyface here in this match, which would be really odd. But that's the match. Don't really have many thoughts about it. I guess we'll see what happens.
I'll go ahead and actually buck the odds on that and say Cody Rhodes gets the win just because, like you said, when it was announced that it was not going to be about the briefcase or the contract, which has been the central part of this, it just screamed to me that, okay, well Cody Rhodes probably gets the win here, and they're doing it because he does need all the help in the world as far as getting over as a babyface, because the past dead crowds that have been going on have been kind of painful.
Well, if they are going to switch one finish, this is the one, to be honest. So we'll talk about that and more when we come back from the break. Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here, WrestlingObserver.com. We're joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. We are here every Sunday, 3 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 6 Eastern, on the Sports Byline USA Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio, Channel 92, 94, 794, XM Radio Channel 208, and streaming live worldwide on the internet at WrestlingObserver.com, available on your smartphone. Tune in radio. The TuneIn Radio app, search Wrestling Observer or Sports Byline. The same with iHeartRadio. Also available, iHeart.com. The Talk Radio Portal. Sirius Satellite Radio app as well. Check that out. And we're available on WrestlingObserver.com as well as we are every single solitary day. Daily radio shows. Was up last night with Dave Meltzer. Doing a long radio show, 90 minutes almost, on all of the news in pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. We're going to be up again tonight after SummerSlam. Up again tomorrow after Raw. Tons and tons of shows. If you love this program and you only get to hear it one time per week, you are missing out. WrestlingObserver.com, $10.99 for the members only area. And members only get access to all of the radio shows, and not only all of the new radio shows, but every single show we've ever done dating back to the founding of the site in 2005. So if you love wrestling and mixed martial arts audio, literally no better place to go than WrestlingObserver.com. So head up there and check it out. The right-hand side of the page, a listing of our latest free radio shows. Check those out, and if you like what you hear, consider signing up. It is a great place to go to get caught up on all the news in all of these great mat battle sports, and you can have a good time in your car, your commute, work it out, wherever you listen to your audio. You'll never run out if you subscribe to WrestlingObserver.com. So check it out, and obviously a lot of stuff going on with SummerSlam coming up tonight. We're talking about the card. And Kane and Bray Wyatt, a Ring of Fire match. Bray Wyatt is like a minus 8 million favorite here in this match. doubtful that they'll switch the finish, but you never know. Kane is going to be leaving to film See No Evil 2, which is actually, I believe, maybe the second most successful WWE film of all time, and it was their first. Horror films do very well, and they're making another one with Kane. And we'll see how it does. But tonight, likely Bray Wyatt gets to win. What is the finish of this match, Mike?
The disappointing part, I think, for a lot of people is going to be no fire, because that seems to be the prevailing sentiment, is that they've gone out of their way to say, no, look, we didn't say anyone was going to get burned to death in this match. It wasn't like MVP and Kane, where dude was going to get caught on fire. And I don't know how you can do it in a PG way. I wish... Again, why have this kind of match? Unless obviously it's the Wyatt family will beat Kane at his own game and show you his softness and all that stuff, and we'll see when he comes back from filming the horror movie if they, the character of Kane the Killer returns, and it would make the most sense for it to, because he has staled out, and after all the comedy that he's done with Daniel Bryan, it's obviously time, and Kane's going to be one of the most underrated gimmicks of all time, because we all talk in reverent tones about The Undertaker being the best gimmick of all time, and really, it pretty much is, as far as being, he's a supernatural character. It's just absolutely ridiculous. At the height of WWE programming, he was lighting Vince McMahon's teddy bear on fire, making him cry. So, Kane, coming from that, coming from The Undertaker, is always going to be underrated as far as the gimmick goes, and as far as people always caring about, the Kane character. So it is time to do that, and I don't know how. Obviously, there's going to be interference from the Wyatt family in the whole nine yards, but I think Bray Wyatt, at the end of the day, actually gets a clean pin, and I don't know if he laughs, drops to the knee, and, does his bit, and the fire, explodes or something like that, and when everything comes back again, Kane has disappeared or something like that. But I think that's going to be more the case of, instead of a wacky finish that has to do with the fire or anything like that, I think the post-match that comes out of it with whatever mystical thing that they're going to do, and I'm not saying they're going to do this, but that's probably something that I would do. In this scenario, the way this thing's set up, with already backing yourself into a corner with an Inferno match, I think that's going to be the most important thing that comes out of it.
Does the Wyatt family somehow, I'm trying to think of a finish, lights go out, Wyatt family manage to get through the fire? How about that?
No. I think in that case, because of the way the Wyatt family has been presented as this Jim Jones type of thing, and this weird, Cape Fear type of thing, it would be more that they make them, Bray Wyatt does something, and he's got such a hold over these guys that they walk through the fire to get the Kane. Something like that. And again, I don't know how you do this. They're in Los Angeles, they're in Hollywood. I'm sure there are flame retardant suits that you could put on, and obviously, Brody Lee and what's the other dude's name?
Brody, it's Bray Wyatt, Luke Harper, and Eric Rowan.
Eric Rowan, yeah, that's, you know, Tharoof from Firma Noah fame. They walk through the fire at the behest of Bray Wyatt. I can see something like that happening, and I don't know if that, you know, Kane is so amazed by that that that's when Bray gets the pin or something like that. But again, I'm sorry to think of the wacky with this more than anything else, but honestly, because of the setup that they've had for this and because of where they are, that's kind of the direction my mind has gone on it, where, again, this match is going to be secondary. Without somebody being lit on fire, it's kind of disappointing to have an Inferno match, as bizarre as that sounds to say. And I just think more is going to be played up with the other parts of the story, not the wrestling.
We've got Dolph Ziggler and Caitlin against Big E Langston and AJ Lee in a very strange match. Big E Langston and AJ Lee are the heels, but I find them to be far more likable than Dolph Ziggler and Caitlin. Big E Langston, let me ask you about...
How can you say that?
How can I say that?
Even Layla turned on Caitlin, and I know she's, you know, I mean, just nobody likes this girl.
Yeah. Add me to the list.
Most fans, too, apparently.
Big E Langston, Mike, let me get your opinion on this. I just watched NXT this week, and Big E Langston worked as a babyface against Curtis Axel, and God, he's awesome. I 100% endorse the idea of Big E Langston being the man chosen to be the next John Cena to carry this company for the next 5 years or so. I think he's a great babyface. I think he's a great heel. He moves great. He is a really good worker, given the fact he's only been in this business for 3 years. I just have nothing but good things to say about this man.
Yeah, if he's willing to do John Cena-level Make-A-Wish stuff, then I even more so wholeheartedly endorse it. It's obviously the wrestling is going to be the wrestling with a guy that size. But his facial expressions, his attitude, his, you know, the natural charisma, his obvious sense of humor and wit that he has, whether it be, you know, on Twitter or doing an interview or anything, you know, he's not just a big burly monster. He's, you know, he's got layers to him that have been, you know, pretty apparent, and they do a good job on NXT, the little bit I've seen of it, in doing that with him. And as he continues to grow, I mean, he's the type of guy WWE loves, and he's also the type of guy that WWE fans, when a guy is that charismatic and that good, love to cheer for. They do, again, it's how they've been conditioned and everything, but they do love, you know, huge dudes, and his ability to kind of do a little bit of everything, on top of the fact that he's proven to be a, you know, a better baby face than a heel in a lot of ways, and he's actually been a pretty good heel, you know, playing the second banana role to Dolph Ziggler when they were together, and some of the stuff now he's done with AJ Lee. That's actually something. Again, I don't think there's going to be another Cena for a long time. You always get your special, your Austins, your Cenas, your Thezes, your Brunos. They're generational type of things. But with that said, I mean, as far as being the next guy, yeah, absolutely.
Now, we've also got Natalya versus Brie Bella, which was announced on SmackDown, with Cameron, Naomi, Eva Marie all being involved. Total divas, Mike. I'm not going to go on a rant. I swear to God, I'm not going to talk about that much this week. But do I really have to devote part of my life to watching a show where the Bellas hate Eva Marie, and then I watch Raw the very next night, and Eva Marie and the Bellas are friends? I mean, seriously? Do I have to? But yes, Eva Marie and the Bellas are great friends in WWE, despite being bitter enemies on Total Divas at the exact same time. And they're going to be together this evening. Now, the big question is, does this actually end up on pay-per-view? It's scheduled for pay-per-view, but there is a chance it will be bumped, and instead they will do the tag team title match with Seth Rollins and Roman Reigns against Big Show and Mark Henry, which could in fact be a title change, actually. That may end up on the show tonight. Dean Ambrose and Rob Van Dam for the U.S. title is on the pre-show. How do you think this whole thing is going to play out?
I just, with the Shield and the issues that they obviously have, the fact that Dean Ambrose and Rob Van Dam is the pre-show, and the fact that they have not announced Mark Henry, Big Show, Reigns, and Seth Rollins, I mean, This would be devastating, and I would not do this. But can you imagine RVD going over Ambrose? They do bump, they bump Natalya and Brie. And hey, since the cameras are all around there anyway, filming for either season two or season part 1B, however you want to look at it, of Total Divas, to get that bumped again and Natty's frustration over that, I could see that happening. And if that happens, can you imagine Mark Henry and Big Show, going out there and defeating the Shield? Again, these aren't things that I would do, but the way things are going right now for the Shield and the fact that, Mark Henry and Big Show would be popular tag team champions, it would be hard for them to beat. But if, again, if they're the tag team champions and then you have Rob Van Dam beating Dean Ambrose, which you could make a case for, that makes, sense. It would make people happy in the whole nine yards. I don't think that's going to happen. But I keep having this sinking feeling in the pit of my gut, because if something doesn't change with the Shield soon, you might as well go ahead and do that. I hate to say it. It's not that I want to see it, but you might as well, because if you're not putting them in a good position, this is the group that laid out The Undertaker, Randy Orton, John Cena, everyone along the line. If you're not doing anything with them, then what exactly is going on?
Funny you should mention Undertaker and Randy Orton. That's part of the problem. There have been some things. WWE wasn't happy that when they powerbombed Undertaker through the announce table, Undertaker ended up getting hurt. They really wanted Undertaker and Kane as a tag team at SummerSlam, and because of his injury, that's not happening. So they weren't happy about that. I don't think it was necessarily the Shield's fault. I mean, they looked like they were trying to protect the guy in the powerbomb, but Undertaker's old. He got hurt. And then there was an incident with Randy Orton at a house show. Him and Roman Reigns had words, and, not exactly pleased about that. And most importantly, the Wyatt family is also a three-man team, and they are a Triple H project. And Triple H is, he's had some projects that haven't made it. Amazing Kong didn't make it. Sin Cara hasn't made it. So he needs a crew that's going to make it. And you can't really have two main event three-man crews. So it looks like the Wyatt family is going to be getting the slot that the Shield got. Now, that doesn't mean, this does not mean the Shield is going to be buried. It just means that one is going to be a tippy-top main event crew, and the other probably is just going to be an upper mid-card crew. And right now, it's looking like the Shield is going to end up the upper mid-card crew, and the Wyatt family is going to get that main event slot. So we'll see what happens, but that certainly is what has been talked about. And, we'll see what they end up doing here tonight with all these guys. I would not be surprised at all if Shield end up losing the tag team titles. I know originally the idea was they were going to be kept very strong through Survivor Series, but plans change. And as far as the women's thing, Total Divas did in fact get renewed. The rating was up to 1.67 million viewers in week three, so it's grown all 3 weeks. It is a hit on E. They've re-signed it for, I believe, 6 more episodes, which will be part of season one, for whatever that's worth. And all I can tell you is that there was a WWE party the other night, and the Divas were there, and suffice to say, there were some very interesting pairings that obviously were being done because they're filming this reality show. And there are going to be some big twists for those of you that are big Total Divas fans. Going to be some big twists throughout the rest of the season. And I also suspect that because of one pairing, Randy Orton's definitely turning heel. Back in a moment, Observer Live on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We're back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here, along with Mike Sempervivi. We're here every Sunday, 3 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 6 Eastern, on the Sports Byline USA Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio, Channel 92, 94, 794, XM Radio Channel 208, streaming live worldwide on the internet at WrestlingObserver.com. And tonight, of course, is SummerSlam. Takes place moments after we go off the air. And I know I've got a big SummerSlam party planned here. Super China Buffet Day. Bunch of us going to eat, have some good times, great memories, and SummerSlam. Mike, what are you doing for the show here today?
I'm probably going to fall asleep halfway through it because I went down to Norfolk over the weekend. Didn't intend to. Went down, was going to take the boy to the TNA show. The wife got mad because she saw me spending a lot of money this month on New Japan, and and things like that, and said, well, if you're going to do that, where's my treat? So we decided to stay down there for a couple of days and go to the museum, went to the USS Wisconsin, did all of those sorts of tourist things down there, went to a place called Havana, which was a great restaurant because not only was the food good, every woman in there had an incredibly short skirt on and was incredibly beautiful, so I cannot, you know, express enough. If you're in Norfolk, you might as well stop by the Havana restaurant, get a Cubano sandwich, and look at the incredibly beautiful women. So I'm incredibly tired right now after driving back. I literally just dropped all of my stuff right before you called and we started doing the show. So hopefully I can make my way through it. I'm hoping, you know, get a lot of caffeine and be fired up through it. So hopefully I can do that. And if I do fall asleep during it, it's not anything against WWE. I'm just really tired.
I need a TNA house show report, Mike.
Well, here's the first thing, and I know we'll do this coming back from break as well. Nate Milton, who I like a lot, does the Law podcast, the Review and Impact one, said there were maybe 6,500 to 7,000 people there. I know it was a good crowd, sounded good on TV from all reports and everything. Yeah, there weren't even close to that many.
Oh, boy. All right, we'll talk some TNA, SummerSlam, and UFC when we come back from the break. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live every Sunday here on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. How's it going, everybody? Brian Alvarez here on Wrestling Observer Live. We're here for the next hour talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts here on SummerSlam Sunday. We are here every Sunday, 3 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 6 Eastern, on the Sports Byline USA Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio, Channel 92, 94, 794, XM Radio Channel 208, and streaming live worldwide on the internet at WrestlingObserver.com. You can check us out on the TuneIn Radio app on your smartphone, iHeartRadio, the Talk Portal, the Sirius Satellite Radio app. This is the most listened to wrestling audio show anywhere on the earth! And as a result, that means anywhere in the universe, as far as I know. So Wrestling Observer Live, check it out every Sunday. We're talking SummerSlam. We're talking TNA. We're talking the UFC on FS1 debut last night. Mike's going to give us a TNA house show report after the break. And Mike, are you happy, sad, depressed? Don't care one way or the other that Brooke Hogan is no longer with Total Impact Wrestling, Total Nonstop Action Impact Wrestling, whatever you call it.
You know what, doesn't hurt my feelings one bit, not a horrible actor, and was one of those people, as all these cuts started to happen, we've heard about all these sorts of things, D-Von being one of the last ones here, possibly, maybe, this past Thursday, when you looked at the top of them, you're looking at Hogan, and in a way, I can see you justifying wanting to have Hogan, you know, as far as Spike goes and stuff like that, but it's like, with Brooke Hogan's performances and everything else, and the fact that they were not happy with her whole tweeting of her engagement on Twitter and all that stuff and making it a big deal, and just that the time coming to an end, she was one of those people that you wonder, well, why is she still there, obviously, other than her father, and they had enough, I guess, because she was scheduled to be on there on Thursday and was not, and they ended up firing her or releasing her, or however you want to phrase it, the next day. Again, it makes the most sense financially for them to do. I'm sure it doesn't make Hulk Hogan very happy, but if he wants employment somewhere and he's going to have problems with Hunter in charge of WWE, and getting a big paycheck for doing, not a whole lot, he might as well just suck it up and see what they can do with TNA because they're having a rough road right now.
All right, we're going to talk a lot more about this when we come back from the break. Also, SummerSlam and UFC. So, as they say, do not touch that dial. Back in just a moment. Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here, WrestlingObserver.com. We're joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. Every Sunday, we are here, 3 o'clock p.m., 6 Pacific, on the Sports Byline, USA Radio Network, all across the U.S. Sirius Satellite Radio, Channel 92, 94, 794, XM Radio Channel 208. Streaming live worldwide on the internet at WrestlingObserver.com. Available on your smartphone, the TuneIn Radio app. Check Sports Byline, Wrestling Observer, either of those. You can also check us out on iHeartRadio, iHeart.com, the talk radio portal, also on your smartphone, and the Sirius Satellite Radio app. No way should you not be able to listen to this show every week. The replay is up for free at WrestlingObserver.com immediately after the show goes off the air. So it is impossible for anybody with internet service anywhere in the world to not hear this show. As a result, it is the most listened to wrestling radio show anywhere in the known universe.
Oh, by the way, if you don't have any internet and you're saying, ha, gotcha, wrong, because as long as you have some sort of cell or telephone service,
that's right,
you can dial into Sports Byline and actually hear this show.
That's right. If you go to WrestlingObserver.com, on the front page right now is a list of ways to listen to the show, and one of them is by dialing into your telephone. So if you don't have any internet, you can still hear the show by calling a phone number. So no excuse, everybody. Wrestling Observer live every week. Now, the TNA situation here. We're going to have Mike do a TNA house show review. And Brooke Hogan is gone. And we talked about that in the previous segment. Before we go to the house show report, Mike, I got to ask. Dave and I had a debate about this last night. I don't think it makes one bit of difference that she tweeted about her real-life marriage. Because to me, especially in 2013, what happens in real life and what happens in TV, I don't know. I just think everybody knows it is what it is. You can still attempt to get lost in the television program. Sometimes they make it hard, but that's the idea. And to me, if you're going to get rid of Brooke Hogan, get rid of Brooke Hogan because she was a poor television performer who could not do her job in a competent manner, and not because she tweeted that she was married in real life while they're doing a marriage storyline in TNA.
I agree. I think it's more of a matter of just not being on the same page, because I think, you know, again, if she was, you know, smarter and more long-term into things and cared more about wrestling as, you know, the mentality that they would have of it, it would be, you don't have to deny it, but you don't have to push it or announce it on Twitter or anything like that. If somebody asks you, smile, flash the ring, talk about it if you're asked, but don't do what they did, especially when, again, it's more of, fans are going to make fun of us when they hear this. You know, WWE in some ways is so big, you know, they don't have to care about this, but it's like, it's just more, you know, of paintbrushing in the face of what they're going through. And I think it was more that than anything and an excuse. But you're right. I mean, people can separate the two. And again, that's why I think it was more of a matter of just not being on the same page. She makes a lot of money. She is very poor in, you know, her performances. And, I'm not, you know, hey, I'm sure she's trying very hard. It's just not working. So when you have the out the way you do with Brooke Tessmacher, which they, obviously, or I can't remember, hopefully I didn't ruin next week's show for anybody, but I can't remember which part that was on. But you had all those outs to
you
do
ruined
it anyway.
It. You ruined it!
I'm sorry.
It doesn't matter.
Okay. Well, it doesn't really matter to Mike Tenay either, because I did hear that, you know, when it was being announced, it's like when Bully Ray made the phone call and said, all right, Brooke, that there was no reaction on how could she be doing this? I thought we were having problems the whole nine yards. You know, what will her dad think when he gets back from New York out of this fake business meeting with Spike and Viacom executives? There was none of that. They just kind of let it pass, which kind of tipped everyone's hands on what was going to happen and what obviously is now, because I've ruined it, going to happen next week. And I don't mean to really, you know, spend every time. It sounds awful that I'm crapping on TNA right off the bat, because I had a blast at the show. I guess I'll do one more thing to just kind of poop on them, because they in their program, they have their 2013 program, there are, if you don't count announcers or referees, 56 people listed. Now, if you don't include guys that they have fired or got released or didn't re-sign or are pregnant or spent most of their time in OVW or in MMA, or non-wrestlers or already have an entry, you knock off 25 people. Everyone from Kurt Angle to RVD to Joey Ryan down the line. It was kind of, you know, amazing to kind of page through that thing and see how many people aren't there and see how the, you know, things have went for them. So I'll say that is just one more shot against TNA, which I don't really mean to do, because I had a blast at the show. It was really great. One thing they do is they are very fan-orientated as far as going out there and trying to promote when they're there. They don't do a good job in the lead-up as far as promoting, you know, the weeks leading up to it, and I think the crowd showed that, as I think there was probably, I'll say at best 2,500. I could be wrong. Maybe my counting crowd's ability has dwindled over the years or anything like that, but it wasn't a big crowd. It was a good crowd. It was a vocal crowd. But they just, you know, it was not a big crowd. But they, as far as the people that were there, they take care of them. They bring people into the back, which I thought was a very entertaining way to get the crowd fired up, because every time that they would go to break, Jeremy Borash would come out, and he does such a great job firing everybody up. He's hyping them up, and it's like, we've already taken people backstage. You know, we need 10 more people to take backstage. And we're going to be going live here in a little bit, but we need people to come backstage. And as people are losing their minds, they come back from break. It's a very smart way to do things, and it was, you know, kind of a funny thing to sit back and see. And it was, you know, smart by them. But again, you know, the matches were good. Obviously, there was Hardcore Justice. So, you know, you had the ladder match in the very beginning, you had the tables match, and obviously the title change with Chris Sabin and Bully Ray. So, you know, from top to bottom, as far as merchandise goes, that was, you know, they had a bunch of that, and it was relatively inexpensive, in comparison to WWE. One thing I will say about them, though, is much like Ring of Honor, they don't have a whole lot of stuff for kids. As far as kid sizes and things like that go, and because, you know, Ring of Honor, I kind of understand it because of the fan base, but with TNA, it surprised me a little bit, and so that's something that, you know, again, WWE overloads with stuff like that, but they have stuff for all kinds, and it's kind of amazing for the amount of kids that go to TNA house shows, and they go to TNA, obviously the TV tapings are a little bit different, but who go to these house shows and stuff, that they don't have any merchandise available for them, really. They do have a whole lot of action figures, which, you know, Avery, my son, wanted. He wanted Kurt Angle just because he wanted the belt, proving he's a belt mark just like his father. But, again, the fun, I had a lot of fun. It's a long show. It's very long. They started at 7 o'clock. They're in an hour tape delay. So, you know, from 7 to 9, that was great, but the crowd burns out after that. And if it, you know, the end of next week's show is probably the most the crowd got fired up. And you'll probably hear that during it, too, unless they really do a hell of a job sweetening the sound. But the wrestling fans in Norfolk, most of them, there were a lot of older people there. It was a very nice crowd, a really respectful crowd. Obviously, they were all fired up by all reports from people who watch it on TV. And a little bit of an older crowd, a lot of, like, you could tell they were ex-NWA fans there, and when the reaction that Sting got every time that he was on the screen kind of showed that as well. So from top to bottom, it was a really fun night, and it's, you know, it's kind of too bad as you sit back and think. The type of trouble that they're in financially, even though they have Spike TV support and everything, if that happened to go, it's kind of sad to think that this company is going to go. It's, you know, not like you couldn't see it coming or anything like that, but it's going to be disappointing because, again, it was entertaining and there still needs to be some sort of option other than WWE. Not that you can't watch WWE. There needs to be a full challenger to them, but there just needs to be an alternative for you to sometimes, you know, clear your brain and watch.
We don't have a lot of time in this segment, but we'll get into it in the next segment. But my question is, Fightmaster just got moved to Thursday nights after Impact. It was dying on Wednesday, absolutely dying, and they moved it to Thursday, A, to move it out of prime time, and B, to have it follow Impact, because Bellator following Impact always did better numbers than Bellator following anything else. So, to me, I mean, that's proof that Impact is valuable to Spike. You know, it may not be the highest rated show, but per Spike standards, it does a good number, and it can serve as a good lead-in for a company that they own. So, to me, I think that it's less likely that TNA would just completely shut down than it is that the Carters would get upset about losing a bunch of money and then negotiate with Spike and Viacom and see if Viacom could buy TNA at a fire sale price, and then Viacom would keep the company alive and maybe even pump in some money to help boost it a little bit. So let's talk about that when we come back from the break. You are listening to Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here, WrestlingObserver.com. We're joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. We are here every Sunday, 3 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 6 Eastern, on the Sports Byline USA Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio, Channel 92, 94, 794, XM Radio Channel 208, streaming live worldwide on the internet at WrestlingObserver.com. We're also available on the TuneIn Radio app on your smartphone. That's the TuneIn Radio app, as well as iHeartRadio on the smartphone, plus iHeart.com, the talk radio portal. You can always check us out there, live and replayed. The replay airs at WrestlingObserver.com immediately after the show goes off the air as well for free, so check that out. And the Sirius Satellite Radio app as well, so no shortage of ways to hear about this program. We've been talking a lot of different topics, bouncing around all over the place. We're going to get into UFC on FS1 a little bit later on. But first off, Mike was at the TNA House Show a couple of days ago, and before the break, we were talking about the possibility, and this is not even like, you know, no one's even discussed this with me. This is all speculation on my part, but the possibility that perhaps someday Viacom and Spike TV could purchase TNA, because TNA is a valuable property to them, a less valuable property to the folks at Panda Energy. Bob Carter, you know, it's an expensive hobby for Dixie Carter. So maybe he would be open to the idea of selling to Viacom, Spike TV, making some of the money that they lost, and then Spike and Viacom taking over and pumping a little bit of money into it. Not a lot of money, I would guess, but some money. And maybe moving on in that direction, TV companies owning wrestling companies, long-term has been a benefit and a curse. What are your thoughts on this possibility, Mike?
I absolutely can see that happening because, again, Spike doesn't have that signature program or it hasn't been fed any of the sports. Very little, I think. Maybe they've had a football game here or there, but for the most part, it's, you know, they've shown Bellator and they've had wrestling and that's, you know, when they had the UFC and that's been about it and that's been some of their best rated stuff. So, yeah, until that time happens where they rebrand the thing or give it a lot more ammunition to work with, Impact is going to be valuable programming. As far as buying them outright, I could see that. I mean, it would absolutely make a lot of sense, and they could do what they want with it. I could also see them doing something where they make it kind of advantageous towards them, where they buy into it. They have some controlling interest in it, obviously, because it would be, you know, the show airing on their network, and what could TNA really do about it? But have it in a way where they're at least feeding the Carter some money and then recouping some cost out of it. Because, again, you know, the way things are going right now, you know, who needs Hulk Hogan? Does TNA need Hulk Hogan? Or does, you know, Spike need him more? You know, and obviously Brooke, this thing with Brooke is going to be a test. Something's probably going to have to give, you know, relatively soon. But while the thing keeps, you know, drawing, you know, at least is getting some TV ratings and is the top-ranked thing or close to being the top-ranked thing on Spike, you know, again, that would, a sale like that would make the most sense. I could just see Spike doing it in a way that was really, really more advantageous to them.
All right. So anyway, the Impact show this past Thursday night, new world heavyweight champion Bully Ray has won the title back from Chris Sabin. I've heard the next week's show is very good. And I don't want to talk a lot about TNA here, but did you get a chance to watch the show on Thursday? And any thoughts on it?
Brian, I was at the show on Thursday. Keep saying house show. No, it was not the
I'm sorry. I was confused. I'm sorry. I was confused. So that's why you ruined the next week's show.
Yes, it is. I'm sorry.
I see.
That's, yeah. It's and again, the crowd was really good, but it's going to need to be sweetened because it was good. Not as good, obviously, as Hardcore Justice, but, you know, you had all that stuff going on, including the Angle announcement and Sting, who was fantastic during it. I'm sure everybody else probably thinks so as well. I haven't really heard, you know, any reaction to Sting at all, but I thought he was fantastic during the thing. Again, it was not a big crowd. They moved everybody to one side. The hard camera side had nobody on it, except for a few people in a couple rows. That's the camera that they looked at. Everything took place. They had everybody, positioned right behind, the other side of the ring. So, and again, it was a good crowd, but that long of a TV taping kind of burns you out. But with that said, the payoff at the end of next week, was really good, and it was something that legitimately popped the crowd again and really, I think, came off quite well.
You know, I did not put two and two together that entire time when you mentioned Norfolk. Not a single time did I put two and two together. Because our house shows are always good. You know what I mean?
Well, that's the thing. We had considered it because it was, Thursday was Norfolk, and then Friday was, it wasn't Portsmouth, but I'm brain-locking on where it was, not Newport News or Virginia Beach, but it was somewhere, Roanoke, that's where it was, which is kind of far off, but yeah, we could make an adventure out of it, but, you know, all right, one night was enough, and I was not going to anger Jessica anymore by having her sit in a hotel room or anything like that while Avery and I were out having fun watching wrestling.
She didn't want to go gawk at Robbie E?
There was no Robbie E there.
Man, what
but
next?
But you know what was there? A Park and Park Esquire towel.
And it was only $5?
$5. It was the best bargain there. I actually got that. And there was a, and I'm sure you saw this, there was an incredible doppelganger that was down ringside that looked just like Joseph Park, down to the, he had the black jogging outfit with the white trim. He actually had a bald spot, and you know, kind of like Joseph Park's, where it's kind of like thinning at the very top, not a lot, but you could see a little bit of light there. You know, the towel and the whole nine yards, the glasses, and that was actually quite entertaining.
Believe it or not, I never saw that.
That's, yes. Hopefully he makes more of an appearance next week. Yeah, that was fantastic.
Now, speaking of house shows, which you didn't go to, you went to TV. I'm very disappointed to hear that there was a house show scheduled for this coming, I think it was Saturday night, here in near, about 2.5 hours away, but in Yakima, Washington. And I always like going to TNA house shows, and I was going to try and get a bunch of big, I was going to try and caravan with a bunch of friends, go have some fun. Canceled.
It's disappointing, because with the amount of money they spend on the top guys that they have, you know, the Rob Van Dam story is always the one that wins the day, where it's like, you know, I had to keep telling people, you know, they said, what happened to you? And it's like, well, I'm wrestling. And they say, where? And I say, you know, TNA or Impact. And they say, what? And it's like, oh, it's on national TV, and they still have no idea what he's talking about. That's a problem. And their local promotion, I know, I think it's Hermie Sadler has done a lot in Virginia, at least on the western part, or the western part of the state and everything. And they have their pockets where they do okay, and they have a you know, relatively rabid fan base that really likes them and really likes going to their shows and everything, but it's just, it's disappointing that they cannot get the word out enough where, you know, to drum people up. And in a, again, in a city like Norfolk, I was a little surprised, because I remember talking to Les Thatcher when the first time I had driven down to North Carolina, and you're going down all these old, you know, these old towns and these, you know, the country areas and marine life areas down there. And it's like, you know, give me the Briscoe brothers and like 10 other guys, and I could still, I bet you somebody could draw money down there. It wouldn't be a lot of money or anything like that, but it's like, you know, again, with the people that were there and the issues they have with house shows, I can't believe that a million people watch their shows, nobody watches the pay-per-views, and then nobody comes to the house shows, and that's got to be a lot to do with the local promotion and everything coming in. I mean, it's great to have a wacky radio station with a DJ on that loves wrestling, that's going to be out there promoting it, and then you give them some shine at the shows and the whole nine yards. But again, for a national product to have this issue, and I know WCW's had this issue towards the end, and actually in the 90s, you know, they did. And it's, again, it's just, it's frustrating to see it happen, because again, you know, they do have Robbie E, who's entertaining, Kurt Angle, and lots of guys, you know, Magnus that are down there, Samoa Joe, that I want to see make money and have jobs in the whole nine yards, because they're not going to have them in WWE, or many of them would not have them in WWE. And it's just frustrating that they spend a whole lot of money and they seem to waste a whole lot of money, but trying to drum up interest in their shows and getting people to separate from their money is just something that they've been whiffing on for a long time now.
What did you think of UFC on FS1?
I thought it was really good. I didn't realize that we were out, so I didn't realize they were going to show a lot of the pre-show with fights and everything. I wasn't sure exactly what the plan was going to be there, so I'm trying to think of what fight it was that I walked in at. But I saw the whole main card, and it was, you know, again, for a free show, it was really fun. And obviously there was, you know, some issues with Fox Sports 1, and you know, maybe if you want to try to take a positive out of the way things went, as far as the lead up to it, there was some interest with, you know, people probably hearing about Fox Sports 1 who may not have heard otherwise, because there was an issue over getting it cleared, and all that kind of worked out, and they had an entire day of NASCAR, which I would not have done. I know that was going to be the central part of the day, but I would have added a lot of football in and a lot of Fox personalities into that equation to try to drum up more interest in it. But seemed to work out really well for the UFC, regardless of the rating that it gets, because you had a couple quick knockouts, you had Chael defeating Shogun, and actually that pro wrestling style promo that he cut, I thought was, you know, obviously really entertaining afterwards, and, you know, a great polarizing thing, because if you hated Chael before, you really hate him now. Once you can get punched in the face, especially, you know, calling out the beloved Wanderlei Silva in the way that he's, you know, he is now. So there was a little bit of everything on it, and some fun performances, and again, for a free show, you can't say there was anything wrong with that.
So the show did feature, in fact, Chael Sonnen choking out in the first round via guillotine choke, Shogun Hua. And it's funny because I was watching the show and I didn't have time yesterday to do my picks, but we had done the betting game with Todd Martin. And I remember I was going through, I spent so much time going through trying to figure out who to bet against or who to bet on. And I chose Conor McGregor, which in the end seemed like kind of a stupid bet. But at the time, I thought, hey, there's a chance. Guys, I can make some money here. You know, lots of guys come to UFC with a lot of hype. Sometimes it doesn't pay off. But anyway, show's starting, and Shogun's coming to the ring. And my buddies are like, who are you picking here? And I was like, well, Chael, obviously. I was like, why didn't I pick Chael in the betting game? Like, I had no doubt in my mind he was going to beat this man. And he did decisively, and then when it was over, I felt like a complete idiot. So anyway, we'll talk about this when we come back from the break and what it means. Wrestling Observer Live, everybody, on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here, WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. We're here for the next 20 minutes talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. Here every Sunday for 2 hours, 3 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 6 Eastern, Sports Byline USA Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio, Channel 92, 94, 794, XM Radio Channel 208, streaming live worldwide on the internet at WrestlingObserver.com, available on the TuneIn Radio app on your smartphone, search Wrestling Observer, or what's the other one, Sports Byline. Check out iHeartRadio, iHeart.com, the talk radio portal, as well as the Sirius Satellite Radio app, front page of WrestlingObserver.com. The replay goes up immediately after the show. Literally the most listened to wrestling radio show anywhere in the universe. So no excuse to not listen. And we are here talking all of the news, pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. Just like to, I'm just going to move on.
Mike's no matter how fast
laughing uproariously.
14 minutes.
Yeah, this would have been the longest 14 minutes of my life. Let me just tell you. If we'd have had the wrong segment, I had an incident occur, everybody. I'm not going to go into details here, but it sucked. That's all I got to say. It sucked! Anyway, UFC on FS1. We're talking the Chael Sonnen submission win over Shogun Hua. And Mike, Wanderlei Silva's next up. Has Chael Sonnen pretty much resigned himself that he's ever going to win a title at this point? Because that was the most impressive win of his career. And he didn't even bother asking for another championship match. He wants Wanderlei Silva. Maybe he figures that Wanderlei is an easy fight, and he could beat Wanderlei, be two in a row, and then he can ask for a title match. I don't know. But I do know he looked great last night, and Shogun Hua did not look great. And it was interesting. It was a fun show.
Yeah, he's obviously a smart guy, and, you know, he's been calling and looking for Wanderlei Silva for quite some time, for whatever reason that it is. Obviously, you know, there's going to be interest in it because, you know, diehards and the longtime people that have followed Wanderlei Silva, and the fact that he's kind of turned himself into went from the axe murderer to the axe murdering teddy bear sort of thing now, where it's just Wanderlei's everybody's friend, and he wants to be respectful and all that stuff, and the whole nine yards. He didn't want to fight Brian Stann because he was a hero. And all that sort of stuff. And Chael's smart. You know, he's at that point in his career. He knows there would be backlash for anyone trying to get him to buy him in a title fight or anything like that. And, you know, he is smart enough to know if he does win another one or two in a row, then he can go ahead and ask for that one, you know. But you can look at what happens with Uriah Faber right now, who absolutely in every way you could say deserves a title shot or deserves to be in the mix of a title shot. And you see the pushback that he gets. So no matter how impressive that win was, Chael knows about one thing, and that's promoting Chael and promoting a fight and trying to extract the most money out of people possible or get the most eyeballs. And that's, I think, the first and foremost thing on his mind.
Faber did look awesome last night. And, you know, we were discussing the show with Dave, and Dave was convinced that there's absolutely no way that Faber could ever beat Jose Aldo, or ever beat Henin Barão. And granted, you know, he's had chances and didn't, but I don't think it's impossible that he could beat these men. I would guess that they would win more than they would lose, but Faber looked incredible last night, and Aldo has had, he's had bad days. He's had days where he was sick. He's had days where he was injured. And the idea that, I mean, I think he broke his foot actually in his last fight in the first round. And the idea that Faber could never beat these men, I think is ridiculous. But he certainly, I don't know if I would, you know, I would not book him in a title match now. But I mean, if he destroys another top name the way he completely, I mean, he was in big trouble against Alcantara last night for the first 2.5 minutes. But once he got out of trouble, he obliterated this man. And if he obliterates another man, I have no problem giving the guy another title shot. And I think he could win.
Yeah, it's not like Alcantara is a bum or anything like that either. There was like, well, now Faber's getting old or something like that. he's a really good fighter, and he really surprised Faber. But, you know, once they went to the ground and, you know, and Alcantara just couldn't get him, and Faber, even though he had kind of, you know, was working for Faber's back, and Faber was just landing shot after shot after shot on the ground to his face and looking up the monitor and knowing exactly where he was and then, you know, coming back in the way that he did and just beating the tar out of Alcantara the rest of the fight, you know. And look at Dominic Cruz. You know, what is he going to be like when he comes back? And like you said, Faber can beat these guys. They're going to win far more than they lose against Faber, but this isn't not Diego Sanchez, a Kenny Florian type situation where he can't beat the champion and can kind of beat everybody else. Faber really can dominate everybody else, and it's just, you know, look, it's not like he gets immediate shot after immediate shot. He goes, he's got to win a couple more fights, even though there were, you know, a couple in a row, and he was in the eliminator and all that stuff. It's not like he won't pay his dues and fight other guys, like, you know, fighting Menjivar and fighting Jorgensen, which was a tough fight, or, you know, on paper, it was a tough and interesting fight, even though, you know, Jorgensen was, you know, underneath Faber, and it was trained by Faber a little bit and everything else. I mean, Jorgensen beats most guys. So, you know, the impressive victory there and impressive against Alcantara. And the other thing with Faber in title fights is it's not like, yes, he's lost on paper one-sided fights as far as, you know, I think, you know, at least, you know, one or two were unanimous decisions. You know, Barão was a unanimous decision. Cruz was a unanimous decision. But it's not like he was out of those fights or anything like that. They were highly competitive 10-9 rounds that were, you know, again, Faber may have not have won them. It was clear the other guy did, but he didn't embarrass himself at all. He gave you nothing to say that he shouldn't be there fighting for the title. So people may complain about this. They may not like Faber, and I think, you know, some of it is a little more, you know, deep-seated in that. He beats everybody else so bad, you may get tired of seeing it over and over again, but you can't say he doesn't deserve it. And frankly, I don't know how you can say you can get bored with it because, again, Faber last night, great example, puts on fun fights.
Now, he has not fought Dominic Cruz since he brought him up since October 1 of 2011. It's going to be over 2 years by the time he gets back into the cage. They have not stripped him of the bantamweight title. Obviously, he's going to have to do a champion versus champion match. And I don't know. His style so relied on speed and quickness. And he's coming off two massive knee injuries, which, of course, your speed and quickness in movement is all about your legs, your knees. And I honest to God, I could be wrong, but 2 years off, massive knee injuries, a style like Cruz's, I don't think he will be the fighter that he was when he returns. I think it's impossible.
No, Barão probably tears him up.
Yeah, he tears him up.
And then you have the situation where you could do Cruz Faber again. They're both tied up 1-1, and you could do that again with, let's say, okay, Dominic, or it was that just, you know, the other guy's been a dominant champion since you've been gone, and he's been, you know, out of his mind. So how about you go against the guy who you beat last time around by unanimous decision and who wants to rally back and get a title shot? You know, you could make something out of that. So it's interesting, and I have a feeling that they're, again, depending on what happens with Cruz, they're probably going to cross again, he and Faber. But like you said, it's been a long time, and he doesn't have a lot of time because being a champion emeritus, you know, he doesn't have a lot of time for you know, to shake off the ring rust or anything like that. So it will be very interesting to see what happens when Cruz comes back. But frankly, in the unification match, I don't really think he gets past that.
The rest of the show, there was some good stuff. Alistair Overeem knocked out by Travis Brown after nearly finishing Brown. A lot of come-from-behind victories here. Faber didn't really come from behind. I mean, he did in the first round, but he just destroyed the guy for three rounds. But Travis Brown definitely came from behind. Uriah Hall, future in question. Dana White doesn't think he's a fighter. Loss to John Howard, split decision. Joe Lauzon, destroyed by Michael Johnson. Matt Brown, a destruction, destroyed Mike Pyle and then claimed that Pyle was better than GSP, which was the funniest line on a UFC show in God knows how long. Mike Brown, who retired and came back, may retire again after getting destroyed by Steven Seiler, also quickly in the first round. And Conor McGregor did beat Max Holloway, but he suffered a knee injury trying to escape Holloway's half guard. And as a result, did not at all live up to the hype, although he was beloved. And we'll see what the future holds for Conor McGregor. Obviously a very charismatic, popular guy from watching the first round, hell of a fighter, but a lot of pressure coming into UFC. You know, I can't even tell you the number of guys that have come in with the hype of Conor McGregor, Uriah Hall being one of them, and never panned out in the big league. So I guess we'll see where it goes. But those were the highlights from the show. Any thoughts on any of those fights?
You got to give it to Travis Brown. You really, really do. He ate so many hard punches and so many knees to the body. And it looked like Overeem was just going to overwhelm the guy. But when he stayed in there and he started to land a little bit to Overeem's body, and, you know, Overeem's just one of those guys. You know, it's kind of funny. You try to get away from the Tank Abbott era in MMA, and the guy goes all out and then burns himself out. It's still with a lot of these heavyweights, it's the same exact thing. And Overeem was one of them again, just started to wear down and ate that foot to the face. And it was only, you know, it was two hammer fists. And, you know, the first one was really the one to do it that put him out. And again, really impressive performance. And, you know, again, the fact that he's a guy who's 6'6" and doesn't tire. Obviously he tired, but he's got that sort of will to him. That's, again, a couple more wins by him. You know, you talk about a relatively quiet heavyweight division. Obviously, you know, Cormier is probably more suited for 205. Josh Barnett is obviously going to fight soon, too, and this is, you know, kind of a look into the past and everything. But, you know, that heavyweight division kind of slim, you know, Travis Brown just made himself interesting and will make himself more interesting with another couple wins.
Guess what's going head-to-head with SummerSlam tonight?
Total Divas.
Total Divas, head-to-head. What do you think about this show, Mike?
You know, maybe I'll watch Total Divas, and that'll guarantee that I won't fall asleep. Actually, it will probably guarantee I fall asleep.
Three episodes now.
Gets wackier as the weeks go by now, doesn't it? Remember we talked about what would be a work and what would be a shoot on this thing, and how would people be portrayed in the whole nine yards? Well, I don't want you to get upset or anything, but what do you think about it?
Well, I was not a fan last week. Although, honest to God, this is what people understand about me. When I don't like a show, and I absolutely blow my stack on a radio program, which I did last week, I feel a lot better afterwards. So now we're going into the show tonight. Doesn't bother me one bit. I'm going to watch the show. Maybe when it's over, I'll flip my lid again. And maybe I won't. Who knows?
Are you going to watch picture-in-picture style?
No, I'll watch it later, of course.
You should. Picture-in-picture.
Picture. I'm going to have a whole crowd over to watch SummerSlam. I'm not going to get away with picture-in-picture Total Divas.
You never know who's coming over. Are the women going to be there? That's who this is aimed at, correct?
There's plenty of women.
And in the demo say, if this is a WWE, you know, type of audience watching this, maybe you'll be surprised, and the people that you're inviting over may be down with Total Divas.
I'm sure, I bet you anything, that a large number of them will stay after. Actually, you know what? They won't. They won't. Because, unfortunately, I don't get the East Coast feed of Total Divas. And so SummerSlam is going to end around 8:30 here, because we're going to be starting a little bit late. But it's going to end around 8:30, and Total Divas won't even start until 10.
Damn it.
I know.
Now, when the party starts late like that, do you pause the DVR, or do you start watching later, or do you just pick up where it left off, and then before the show starts with you and Dave, just go back and watch the beginning?
Most likely, I'm going to record it. When we get home, I'll just start at the beginning, and we'll all try not to to get the finishes, although I usually get the finishes, like, before they happen, which is amazing.
You're the guy that's doing this on Reddit.
Nostradamus. Actually, you know what? That is the big question. It's not me, by the way, but we'll get to this after the break, but I don't think the Reddit guy has posted spoilers yet, and usually he waits, but he may... It's interesting. We'll talk about this more after the break. Wrestling Observer Live, Sports Byline, Broadcasting Network. We are back here for the final segment of the show. Brian Alvarez here, WrestlingObserver.com. Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. And I actually haven't gone online in a little while, so maybe he, maybe the Reddit guy has posted his predictions. But as far as I know, he hasn't. And so it's possible. I actually heard something the last time he posted spoilers, which didn't get out, which kind of amazed me. But it did lead me to believe that we will never see predictions from the Reddit guy again. So I didn't know what to make of it at the time. But if we don't get predictions tonight, I at least have some of my questions answered.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Hmm.
That's right.
Leaving it very vague there for people to think about.
There was, allegedly, a confession which was then removed. But I was made aware of the confession before it was removed.
Ah. Now, but, would this be from an active person or somebody works for them or somebody on the outside?
I can't say too much, but I will say this, that the problem is that there's no way to confirm if the person who made this confession was actually the Reddit guy. So the confession could have been a complete fabrication. The person making the confession could have been a complete fabrication. It's impossible to determine whether or not they were the same guy. But the confession was very interesting, and the confession led me to believe that there would not be spoilers posted this time. Now, granted, the Reddit guy himself, I think, did say that he wasn't going to do spoilers this time. So, you know, this all could have nothing to do with anything else. But so far, no predictions. So whole thing is just really interesting to me. That's all I'll say. Very interesting to me.
Much more interesting than the Titor stuff, but I love the timing of this. Hopefully, when Art Bell returns, he will have something on this person.
It's possible. It's possible. SummerSlam is starting, everybody. Later on tonight, WrestlingObserver.com. Dave and I, a brand new radio show talking all about it. So head over there and check that out. We'll be back after Raw as well. Have a great time tonight, everybody. Thanks, Mike. Thanks all the folks at Sports Byline, Sirius Satellite Radio, and of course, all of you, the listeners. We'll talk to you again next week. Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network.